The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
All right, we're taping this less than 2 weeks away from scheduled games to kick off. And honestly, I've got a variety of feelings. I'm excited. I'm pumped. I feel like a kid ready to go outside and play with his neighborhood friends on that first day of summer. And then you look around and there's storm clouds rolling in. And you're hoping they're fast moving away from your neighborhood, right? And ahead, Andrew Adelson will join us with much more on the latest ACC news surrounding North Carolina and Notre Dame pausing football practice as more and more schools go to remote learning. Adam Rittenberg on the state of the Big Ten after parent and player protest on postponing the season and the lack of communication, which forced the Big Ten to issue another statement this week saying, no, they will not have a fall football season. And a little bit on Commissioner Kevin Warren. He's made some mistakes when it comes to communicating things, but the anger towards him building up in the last week and a half to me is ridiculous. And the silence from the presidents in the Big Ten who voted, that to me is the tipping point and should be largely discussed, but they're making Warren the scapegoat. But first, let's bring in our guy, David Pollock, joining us here. And appreciate you taking a break from Fortnite and all your video games to join us here on this pod. We taped last week, by the way, and I mentioned this to you know, our listening audience. We taped last week, Tuesday, and then we had to bag that podcast because of the news from the
there was some greatness on that podcast too, I thought, by the way.
You were shining. You were fired up and shining on that podcast.
You were less than stellar, but that's a normal. That's a day that ends in Y. So that's besides the point.
Good thing we got rid of it, right? Good thing. More less than stellar work coming your way in the next few minutes here. But no, seriously, you know, you've had some time to process it. Obviously, you joined us on SportsCenter that Tuesday with the breaking news. It's been about 10 days now. What's your vibe right now from where it was last week, where we're going to see 40% of the Power Five conferences not being involved this fall season for sure, still unknown with the other 60%. What's your vibe feeling from last week to this week that we will have a football season in the fall?
Well, obviously the big stumbling block or the big domino that we were looking at was the Big 12. And if they could stay strong, the SEC and ACC appeared exceptionally strong. And the Big 12 came out and said, we're going to have football. And I think to me, it's been optimism since. You know, listen, there's I think every day we know we can wake up and something can change. Just like the saliva test that we've gotten, you know, like things are going to continue to shift. Things are going to continue to morph. Just like classes. I mean, that's blown away. You know, I remember talking back in the, you know, a couple months ago when all this stuff was running rapid, and I was just like, why would we go back? Why wouldn't the students and athletes just go back? Why do the on-campus kids need to go back and create more people on campus and more ability for everybody to get the virus? Why would that happen? And now, what we were told was, no, you can't do school. You can't not have school and have football. And now we're seeing that starting to change. So, you know, the more things stay the same, the more things change. And but I feel confident. I feel confident we're going to have a season. I'm going to continue to hold on to that optimism until breath is in my body. I mean, I want football. You want football. Everybody wants football. And I know it's going to look different and feel different. But I'm encouraged that we still have teams and conferences that are wanting to play football.
Yeah, and just to give you an idea, Thursday, September 3rd, South Alabama at Southern Miss, 8 o'clock, and then Central Arkansas at UAB, 8 o'clock. They will have the entire country all to themselves if they have football in the 13 days away. And then we'll see how this plays out, because if you look at the rest of the schedule, Saturday, September 5th, the American is playing and Memphis hosting Arkansas State, SMU's on the road at Texas State, North Texas hosting Houston Baptist, Army is hosting Middle Tennessee, Marshall's hosting Eastern Kentucky. The Monday night game on ESPN, Navy hosting BYU. That is Monday, September 7th.
And hey, Kevin, I want to ask you something, Kevin.
Yeah.
This means something to me, but I'm very curious, and I haven't heard anybody talk about this. The fact that Army, Navy, and our service academies are playing, does that mean anything to you?
That's a good question. You know what? What's most important to me is that if we have football, that they play against each other. As a kid that grew up in the Philadelphia region, knowing what Army Navy meant to everybody around there, it just shows you. Here's the thing, too, though. Campuses are different. Each setting and each environment is completely different. Pollockin, and one thing we are seeing is if you've been on the campus at Army, you've been on the campus at Navy, it's a completely different mindset than what we're seeing at potentially Michigan State, North Carolina, where you're seeing the rise in testing, positive tests. Because the one thing that remains undefeated, life has changed from generation to generation on how we process college football and how we have colleges, right? But one thing remains undefeated from 18 to 22-year-olds, college kids like to party. As we have seen pictures in the last week where kids are congregating on campuses throughout the country, many of those pictures are maskless kids. You are not going to stop them. And now what you're seeing right now, Pollock, is this concept that slowly, something that was unthinkable maybe months ago, maybe at the end of spring, this concept of having football without kids on campus.
And you know what?
Right? And that's where Army and Navy have that. They have that. They do not have the partying atmosphere where people are congregating everywhere.
You don't think people party on Army and Navy campuses?
Hey, they may.
I disagree with that.
But they're not doing it. They could be, but they're not doing it in the public forum that we are seeing, I think, around the country.
We haven't seen any pictures of it. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But here's the thing, what you just said. I remember talking about this months ago, and I think it was me and you talking about it. And I don't understand why people would be upset that you can have classes online and student athletes still play football. I don't understand that, because here's the deal. When I signed up as a student athlete, I knew I had to forfeit my summers, Kevin. I knew I had to forfeit my falls. Like, I had to forfeit a lot of my time and a lot of my, my off time, my party time, my fun time. I had to forfeit that as a student athlete because I knew I had a job to do. And I knew I was going to play football, and I knew that was going to be a part of it. And I wanted to be great at it. So I knew I had to make sacrifices. It's no different now. You're going to have to make sacrifices as an athlete. You're going to have to make sacrifices that other kids are not going to have to do. And then guess what? That's okay. That's why your school is completely paid for. You know, that's why your food is paid for. That's why you got clothes and stipends and all the stuff that you get. So it doesn't bother me in the slightest. I wonder, there are people that I've seen, you know, be negative about it and it bothers them. Does it bother you?
I think it's a slippery slope on how we define student athletes. Cause you know, I'm not sure if you could say student athletes at all times now, because the way the money machine plays out in college football and then trickles into college athletics from here on out, it is very different. Now, I will say name, image, and likeness is moving one step forward to giving many of these players the opportunity to capitalize much yep. more than what they deserve. I mean, not what they deserve, than what they're getting right now. Because yeah. they deserve more than that, I believe, especially if you're a star that's generating money. And we've talked about this. This was on the podcast that had to be erased. We talked a little bit about this where, you know, not every athlete is going to be measured as the same type of star as Johnny Manziel or, you know, a Cam Newton or, you know, a Tim Tebow. And I'm just
talking about like the 1.5% that actually make it to the NFL. And that's the part that blows me away. And we have all this amateurism talk and all these people, because the fad is, let's talk about the amateurism and let's talk. Everybody wants to be, let's pay the players. They're getting screwed, blah, blah, blah. Really? I got a $400,000+ education. You could drop a kid off, by the way, in his underwear at the University of Georgia down the street, and he'll look like a millionaire by the time he leaves campus. Like, that's how well these guys are taken care of. Do the players need more? 100%. Should they get more? Yes. Name and likeness is going to accomplish that. We can continue to accomplish that. I get a kick out of the people. Poor, poor, pitiful athletes. Dude, we are treated so well. And the ones that don't get that shot to go on and play at the next level in the NFL, do you know how many doors are open because of what you did for that university? Like, I had so many doors open and so many opportunities given to me because I was a student athlete and because I played football. And because all the benefits that come along with it. So I don't disagree that we need to continue to find a better way to compensate. But let's not act like these kids aren't getting taken care of. I'm not with that. I promise you that.
My issue has always been, and me and you talked about this again on the podcast that doesn't exist anymore.
So stop talking about it because it doesn't really matter. About it didn't this. Exist. It never existed. That, we're starting now.
Ben, I don't want you to say if I bring it up. Well, you've already said that before. Well, I'm going to say it again. My issue is that giving opportunities to many of these student athletes to get jobs outside. And I said this repeatedly. I did 5 internships and I worked nonstop. I did a whole bunch of things for my ability to continue to gather stuff on my resume. And if there are certain players that know they don't have an NFL dream but need experience, they need to do something to make money to survive, because many of these kids are many of these student athletes and young men and women are trying to also get an education, but they still need to find a way to take care of mom and dad at home or their families at home. And if they want to work, they should have the ability to work as well on campus or doing something that's related to something for their career down the road. I think sometimes we're seeing that being limited. We've also talked about trimming the fat. Some of the money these commissioners are making, some of the money these coaches are making.
That was my biggest deal. And that was my biggest point of contention. When you've got Mark Emmert making all this daggum money, you've got Sankey making all this money, and Larry Scott and all of these guys, all these commissioners making hand over fist money. Bro, if they're making $500,000, which by the way would be a significant pay cut, they're still making a really good living. Like, they're still doing all right. If they're making $1 million, it's still a 20% cut from a lot of these people. It's asinine what they're making. So find the way to trim fat and get rid of things. And by the way, the NCAA is going to be a big area that's a lot of fat can be trimmed. Because I think Merton Hanks being hired, by the way, is the first step in getting rid of the NCAA. I don't think it's going to exist in a year. I really do not. I think they're going to get rid of it. And I think that opens the door for to be able to take care of athletes even more than they're getting taken care of right now. But name and likeness opens that door to being taken care of more. And let's not forget, Kevin, because I was a college athlete. Let's not forget, it ain't like these kids don't find opportunities and they don't find boosters and they don't find money. It's bullcrap if you don't think they do.
Of course, it's bullcrap.
Okay. Yes. I can testify too. I am not going to give you any concrete examples. It will find
you. When you're opening a door here,
It will find you 100%. So don't act like they're again. They're not getting taken care of. And I know you're always going to do. I'm going to play devil's advocate, play this side and play the other side. But there are plenty of opportunities to cut fat and get rid of like coordinators now that are making well over $1 million and several million dollars. I mean, it's crazy. It's nuts.
Yeah, and listen, we understand the role of the head coach has changed dramatically through the years, but still, in many of these programs, when you're the highest paid employee of a state, that stands out when a state is also having major financial issues. And by the way, you've seen the envelopes, right? Envelopes are being passed. They are being passed around. That's just part of college
tax-free
football.
It's beautiful.
Exactly. Straight cash. and so with all of that, you know, we veered off, but I will say one other thing. If people have, and they've spoken out on the issue, how can you have the college football players on campus and people at home and, you know, other students at home? The bottom line is one word: liability. That's the thing. And that's why we're seeing what the decision made by the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. Liability. No one wants to deal with the liability moving forward if they do not know what's going to happen with this very novel coronavirus. That's the issue here, because of the unknown and the heart issues and the questions down the road. They don't want the liability. And the minute you can suit up and get into practice. And here's the thing. The Big Ten, I will tell you, the Big Ten was very transparent for months saying, we do not know what's going on. We still want to figure things out. The issue is that after they made the announcement, it's the communication to everybody else. And then coaches are doing what they're doing. They're defending their programs. it's to me the presidents that have gone silent after this and then speaking out loud ADs where you could just make a phone call to your president to get the background instead of saying, well, we don't know if a vote was that. You can't do that. Like, if you have a unified front, I look at the Pac-12. The Pac-12 did a really good job of at least releasing something with full detail, dozen pages explaining everything. And then
they,
what
they could have released that 5 months ago because they were ready to fold the tent 5 months ago, though. So,
well, that is a regional thing, too, right? Because when you have four schools in California, that plays a huge role. And California, the state, was hit very hard. This is a regional thing, the same way college football is a regional thing. And here is the charm about college football. You and I, who love the sport, we know that there are a lot of cracks in this sport, but there's a certain romance to certain things around the sport, and it feels like this virus has opened the doors and shined a bunch of flashlights all over so everybody publicly can see the cracks, right?
Here's the thing, though. I want to go back to what you said a second ago, and you talked about the doctors and there being risk and blah 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 and liability, which I'm with. When I play the game of football, Kevin, there's inherent risk. I don't fully know the details of CTE. I don't, by the way. And we didn't know for a long time. Like, there's inherent risk in everything that we do. You see now that the Big Ten players all rallying and trying to understand, and their parents trying to support them and make everybody see, we get it. There's inherent risk. But there's also risk when I drive to the grocery store. And there's also risk when I drive down the highway, when I choose to go on the highway and the speed limit's 70 and I choose to go 80, there's even more risk. I think what you're seeing is there's a lot of people that are very comfortable in life. By the way, I'm one of those people. I'm very comfortable with taking risk. It's okay with me. So if it's okay with the majority of your team and the majority of your players and the majority of your coaches, and they're okay with in taking on that risk, let them take on that risk. That's what I think should be done. That's what I would do if I had a say in this. And I think that's what a lot of the commissioners in the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 right now are saying.
David, I will say this to that. There is inherent risk when you're going outside driving, right? But there's also laws that are out there on wearing a safety belt, right? Now, the safety belt may not save your life, but at least it's going to be something there to protect you, and you have to follow the law. And I go into the mask is there to protect you. You got to follow these local laws or state laws, all right? Because it's there. It's the information that we know on something that's a novel virus that's less than a year old, right? And I will also say, when you bring up CTE, there's an inherent risk, but that is an inherent risk for you, right? Yeah. When you bring up this virus, the virus can affect family, that it can affect other people. It can affect older, you know, older coaches, older people that you're around in an environment where you don't even know you have it. While you may have symptoms and be asymptomatic, you could go home and pass it on and compromise somebody in your family who has other issues, you know, heart issues, breathing issues. That's my issue.
I get that. First of all, there's also a speed limit on the highway that says 70 miles an hour, when if we didn't want to take on more risk in life, it would be 40 and it would be a lot safer and everybody would live a lot longer. There'd be less fatalities, less crashes, but we choose to let people go down the road and go 70 miles an hour. I'm not denying that there are people at risk, Kevin. They're the ones who has to take the most precaution. They're the ones who have to be the most safe. That's going to be on them and their job while this is going on. But you can't ask everybody else to stop living and stop going on and stop doing what they want to do in life and doing things that they enjoy in life because of a small minority. You can't do that. And I'm not saying you're not stopping people anyways. And by the way, people are wearing masks and doctors and all these people are doing everything the right way, Kevin. They got masks on. They got gloves on. They still get corona. Like, I mean, there is no rhyme or reason. They did what they were supposed to do. They were socially distancing and they still got corona.
Yeah, but there are a lot of other stories that we're seeing that if you wear masks, it is preventing it's lowering the percentages of contacting and getting the virus. Like the data, and here's the other thing that's segmented throughout the country. There's data and medical advisory boards and doctors in different parts of the country with different information. Yeah. And unfortunately, we're seeing in college football, no one's sharing. It doesn't feel like they're sharing it together. this goes back to why
that's
we love
crazy,
college football.
What
drives us crazy about college football is the competitiveness sometimes, where it's like, okay, this region doesn't share with that region completely, and your decision making is different from our decision making because our doctors believe this, and you may see it over there. My whole thing is that if you have the idea that this could help you cut down on the possibility of contacting that virus, then you do it. And you can still get it, but at the same time, you still have to follow the rules in the sense that it's going to lower the rate of contacting it. And I also go into this other part. I think the concept of a mini bubble at these training facilities are probably the safest places for the football players right now, for the athletes that are working out, right?
Agreed.
And the idea of not having a football season to me scares me even more, because many of these student athletes will then mingle and be in worse
situations, 100% worse situations,
and probably more compromising situations, right?
Yep.
Because they're 18 to 22 years old. So the idea you could have a mini bubble actually, I think, helps them. And it gives them a certain goal. And that we've heard actually a lot about that, where while all these conferences were practicing in the summer, it was keeping them focused, right, yeah, on the big picture goal. That's where it gets questioned. All right, so then how do we view these people? How do we view athletes that are doing something like this? Are they still considered amateurs? And then you and I veered into the concept of they're being taken care of. But we have to also look at this pandemic bringing everything together, a combination of player rights and the idea of a players association, not a union. I'm saying a players association, and bottom line, liability down the road. These universities don't want to deal with something happening and a lawsuit down the road. And
so here's my question. Are we more at risk with the coronavirus by playing football? Does it change? Does the coronavirus, if we play a football season this year, does it change the coronavirus, and does it change the circumstances in any way, shape, or form around the coronavirus?
Well, coronavirus, you know, it's not prejudice. It's going to do whatever it wants to do. It doesn't matter class,
color, religion. So you just told me that those players, which, by the way, are about 100 on a campus at every team, are going to be more safe and more taken care of, as opposed to going off to wherever they would go off to and spread the disease regardless, by the way,
100%.
And still wouldn't follow the rules. But now they're going to be in their own protected little environment where they're taken care of, by the way, and it's proven to work. You've seen this work and you've seen them do a great job. They're going to get
NBA.
Tested. By the way, they're going to get tested and play against other people who don't have corona. So again,
but David, there's another.
Am I missing?
Okay. No. Here we go to another thing. So the bubbles of work with the NBA, the NHL, the MLS, the Women's Soccer League, it has worked when they have the bubble. We have seen it work, right? We've seen also professional baseball players do whatever they want and just catch all kinds of flack, like the Marlins and like we've seen with the Indians, and be irresponsible. And we've seen, it happen with the Cardinals, where they're professionally paid and they still did whatever they want. I'm curious to see what the NFL is going to be like. My thing with this is it also is going to cost a ton of money for many of these conferences to do this type of testing, especially if you're doing it 2-3 times a week and you're traveling. I propose this concept that on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, every conference goes to one spot and you guys just play games. Like, for example, like in the Big Ten, if the Big Ten was so Indianapolis, go to Indianapolis Thursday, Friday, Saturday, have 2 or 3 games a day and then go back. Right. And you're still doing virtual learning, but you're in a controlled environment to a controlled place. You're in the ACC. Do you go to Charlotte and everybody plays there for 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? One game. They're not playing multiple games. I'm just saying one game. Here's the Thursday schedule. We've got three games on the ACC schedule. SEC, do they go to, do you pick Atlanta? I'm not sure. It just depends on what's the situation like in Georgia. So I think that's where you can control the environment. My biggest fear is the travel and then the expenses from the travel and the expenses from the testing and then what happens after that? And I think a lot of these universities, when you release this kind of stuff and you find out you cannot get revenue from fans coming to your stadium, you're not making revenue on a variety of things like parking and concessions, how much money are you putting out and how much money are you actually taking?
Okay, I hear what you're saying, but we've also got to the point now where, you know, because of the saliva testing, we're driving the price down of testing. We're driving up the ability to test and get a quick result, you know? So I think that's ever changing too. And it's not near as bad as it was, you know, several weeks ago before Yale came out with the saliva test. So I think I understand what you're saying, but I just, and listen, I don't hate your idea. I don't think it's I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it could possibly work. I'm getting confused now. You're telling me that the athlete is safe safer with the team. And I completely agree. I think they're safer with the team, but all these teams are doing the same type of thing. If I'm testing on Friday, by the way, and I test all my guys on Friday, nobody has Corona. If they have Corona, they go quarantine, they don't play. Then what I'm playing against other guys on the same team that are doing the same exact thing. I don't understand why we couldn't do that.
I'm with you. And it's just the concept of, I mean, coaches talk about this all the time. They're happiest when they know where their players are all at. And let's not forget, 18-22, college remains undefeated.
Yeah, okay. But there are also consequences. I mean,
yes,
it's very simple. Like, it's very simple. People get, you're going to get something, you're going to get Corona. We're going to test you. You're going to be quarantined. You're going to miss out. I mean, but you don't have to worry about, I know, and I'm going to treat you, and I'm going to take care of everything I need to take care of. It's just, you know, you cost yourself. That's what you did. It was stupid, you know?
Now, here's, you know, we're going to have Andrea Adelson join us in a second to talk about the ACC. But before I wrap up with you, Pollock, here, I want to get your vibe. If we have 60% of the Power Five playing this season, and let's just say it's there's going to be some setbacks. Be mentally prepared. So 10-game schedules, let's just say there are 8 games that are played. Yep. Do you think this season can, and we have a playoff, this season can be a legitimate season where we can crown a champ while you have teams as talented like Ohio State and Penn State and Oregon watching on what's going on?
Yeah, I have no problem with it. Here's where my line would change. If you have 3 of the 5, I'm good with it. Listen, we've also seen people claim national titles in the past. I mean, that are abysmal, that are crazy. UCF did it a couple years ago. We've seen Alabama do it over the year. Like, people have claimed national titles going back a long way with a lot easier circumstances than this. I think if you have 3 of the 5, I think it's definitely, to me, it will be warranted. By the way, do you know, Kevin, the Pac-12 and Big Ten's record over the last 5 years in the playoffs?
Hey, I listen.
Just out of curiosity,
you make a great point.
No, you make 0-9 in the last 5 years in the playoff. They haven't won a single playoff game, the Pac-12 or the Big Ten, in 5 seasons.
Pollock, you make an excellent point, but let me tell you, you watched that Ohio State team. You know what was coming back.
I watched them last year too.
Oh, listen, that Ohio State Clemson semifinal game was one of the hardest hit games I've seen in a long time. It was fantastic, and I actually felt like Ohio State had a legit chance, a better than 50% chance of winning the national title this year, just because I was so impressed on
50.
Was coming
How
back.
How about that? Well, that's crazy. Better than 50. That's a tough. That's a strong statement.
I really believe that. And yeah. I feel bad for Buckeye fans. They would have been my number one preseason team coming into the season. So I feel really bad. And I'm sure that there are many people in Buckeye Nation that are really ticked off that they don't get the chance to see Justin Fields and the talent that they have on offense. And Ryan,
you know what's going to make them feel better, Kevin, though? They're going to be able to go down the street on Friday night and watch high school football. It's going to make them feel a lot better. So they'll be good to go. Obviously, a lot of sarcasm.
Clearly, there's dripping sarcasm.
I mean, how asinine is that? How crazy is that? That you're literally going to be able to have high school football in the state of Ohio, but Ohio State's not going to play college football.
Oh, okay.
That's insane.
Let's just also state that different liability, and also right now, that's what we're saying on August 21st, right? We will see how it plays out, because testing is a little bit different on the high school level than it would be on the college level. And the money that's poured into programs who have the ability to test multiple times a week. There are many schools that don't have that flexibility. And hey, buddy, it was good, man. We had a lot of other topics, but I'm actually glad we got this out of our system.
Well, I'm glad we got out of our system. It's always good to argue with you. And more importantly, by the way, this weekend we have we have David Jacobs' team. We're kicking off our youth league football season against my old teammate David Jacobs, and we've been scout teaming it up. We drew cards up and got everybody ready to roll. The scouting report is in the books. The game is tomorrow at 12, and so we kick off our youth league football season. And by God, I'm excited.
How old are the kids in this?
This will be 11, and they're 11, and some of them are 12. 11 and 12.
11 and 12, right? And your son plays what position?
He plays everywhere on the field, bro. He's kind of our guy. Like, in case of emergency, break glass, like, put him there. But like, defense, he plays outside linebacker, inside linebacker.
So he's Isaiah Simmons. We have the Isaiah.
Whoa,
Simmons.
No! He's not the most talented kid at any position. He just can play a lot of positions. There's a big difference. Don't say that. But he's our smart kid but depending on formation, can be a safety, a linebacker, or a defensive lineman. So he's the brains of the operation for us on the back end.
How much sleep are you getting tonight before this game?
Not much, bro. There's no shot in Hades. I mean, I'm already really jacked up.
You're gripping for this game. Like, you really, like, you're locked in?
I'm so excited that, like, my kids, like, listen, we didn't have baseball and everything shut down. I'm just really excited to have normalcy for these kids. Like, they've been at practice, and it's been so good to see smiles and everybody happy and them getting back to some form of, you know, some form of normalcy for them. And so, yeah, it's been fun. Last week we had our start with our little jamboree type thing, and then this week it's on like Donkey Kong. But no, there's definitely. I mean, me and my buddy, again, David Jacobs played nose tackle at Georgia, and we've already been talking trash back and forth. So you can believe that.
I appreciate that. You said the most important thing: the kids can feel some sense of normalcy, something we haven't had. My two boys start their flag football practice later on this afternoon.
Let's go!
They were beyond jacked. I dropped them off at summer camp, and they got the cleats already loaded, and they are ready to go, both of them. And they're 6 and 8, so I appreciate the idea of continuing this, and we can have some sense of normalcy, hopefully, for the rest of the fall. This is good. David, good luck tomorrow, buddy.
Appreciate it, bro.
It's great to have college football insider Andrea Adelson joining us here on the podcast. And Andrea, we taped last week. I mentioned it before. We taped last Tuesday, and then we had the breaking news hours later from the Big Ten and the Pac-12. So we're grateful that you can come back here and join us. And we've got a lot more information and stuff that's developing in the ACC. A conference that you are very closely monitoring. And let's start with what's going on at Notre Dame and North Carolina. And I can say Notre Dame right now because they're part of the ACC football-wise this upcoming season. Both programs pausing practice for a couple of days this week because of, you know, kids returning, students returning to campus. And then there's a little, I don't want to say spike, but there is a rise in coronavirus cases, positive tests, with the general student body. What more can you tell us about how North Carolina and Notre Dame are approaching this as we tape this on Friday?
Well, obviously, from an athletics approach, it's extremely cautious right now. Both of those universities have announced remote instruction now for the student body. North Carolina has gone a little bit further than Notre Dame. The entire semester now is going to be remote instruction, and they're asking their students to move off campus. Basically, they moved in for a week and then were told too many cases. You guys got to go home. Obviously, extenuating circumstances will be allowed to remain. As for Notre Dame, it's 2 weeks of remote only, and then they're going to reevaluate and go from there. The difference, though, at least right now, as we're taping this, is Notre Dame has seen positive cases on its football team. 5 positive cases since the testing that they've done this week. 6 players are in quarantine as a result of contact tracing. They were going to do another round of testing on Friday, and that's one of the biggest reasons why they have paused workouts out of an abundance of caution. North Carolina has not released any positive tests for its football team, at least as of right now. But look, I think everybody realized that when the students were going to be coming back to campus, there would be positive cases. We'd seen that in football teams as they made their return to campus. Nobody expected any of this return to be happening in a linear fashion. So these pauses and these breaks, I think, were probably expected going into it. Now it's a question of managing it, mitigating the risk, and seeing whether and when it is safe to proceed again with football.
We've seen it in the Big Ten with Michigan State as well. A concept that 5 months ago, I think everybody was like, how can you have football players on campus working out if everybody goes to remote learning? And we're seeing more and more of this. Do you anticipate this decision to be carried out through the rest of the ACC? Are you hearing anything else, other universities considering the idea of remote learning?
NC State has also shifted to remote learning as well because of spiking coronavirus cases among its students. And I would not be surprised if that is an eventuality for everybody. But, you know, interestingly, Bronco Mendenhall just had his Zoom. He's Virginia's coach. And he was really raw and real and honest in talking about the conflict he feels about this idea that football players would be allowed on campus, but the rest of the student body is not. I think that the decision makers in the ACC, at least for this moment on Friday, have kind of made peace with this whole idea that if we're going to try and get a season in, there is this possibility that there'll be more than just a couple of schools that have remote instruction, even though it flies in the face of what you think of when you think of universities and instruction for those football players, student athletes. That word student comes first. But at the same time, I do think it's important to note here that a lot of these football players, before the pandemic even happened, they were taking online classes. Other students on campus were taking online classes. So you can kind of twist yourself into this idea and say, well, they were already doing online classes. And oh, by the way, they were already kind of separated from the rest of the student body in the athletic facilities, in the football facilities, having their own academic support for the athletes themselves, that you can say this is kind of the way we'd already been doing business. And yet you've got a football coach in the ACC who remains conflicted about this idea of student athlete when you remove in-person student instruction. But Bronco also said, look, I know I might be personally conflicted, but I look in the eyes of my players and they tell me, coach, we want to play. And so he knows he has to be the best coach for them and do what he needs to do to get them ready to play a fall season.
It's interesting, too, because Bronco is one of those guys. He doesn't hold back and he speaks his mind. I appreciate him saying the things that he's saying, because we've seen the outpouring of confusion, a ton of anger from parents, players, as well as coaches in the Big Ten. And you have a story up on ESPN.com talking about the combination of that heartbreak and the harsh reality for many of these college football players. Well, what did you learn reporting on this story about how the players, as well as the coaches and the ADs in the Big Ten, are handling it?
Look, this is an emotional time for everybody. And in the wake of the Big Ten decision, we have seen raw emotional reactions that we all understand. We can all relate to the emotion of not having a football season when you've invested your entire life to play football. And in talking to the players that I talked to, I sympathized with them. Rationally, you understand why the Big Ten decided to make this call, to try and push it off until they feel it is safer for all of these athletes to play. In their mind, they were making the safe decision. In the players' mind, they don't understand it because other conferences are getting to play. Why is it safe for another conference to play and not my conference, when they have poured so much into getting ready for this season? In March, when they were all sent home because campuses were shut down and everybody needed to quarantine, these players were told, if you do the right things at home, If you work out on your own, if you wear a mask, if you socially distance, if you avoid seeing your friends, if you avoid seeing extended family, if you avoid parties, if you do all the right things, you come back to campus, you're going to get a football season. And now they don't. And they don't know what to do because they worked for this moment. A lot of these guys gave up opportunities to go into the NFL draft to come back for a chance to win a national championship. Now there is no chance to win a national championship, especially if these other power conferences that have decided to move forward go ahead and try and play this fall. And it's left a lot of heartbreak, confusion, anger, frustration. What do we do now? And I feel for these players. I really do, even though I understand why the Big Ten decided to do what they did. It's a no-win situation for everybody. And I wanted to tell the player's story because we heard so much from coaches and even parents, but the players are so invested in this and a lot of them just want an opportunity to play.
We still have over a month away from the idea of the Power Five when it comes to the SEC, the ACC, Big 12. And I do want to point out one thing. Ross Dellinger of SI, he has a great article out a week ago where he mentioned this one thing where I don't think it's discussed enough, where, you know, the league's medical panel, and that is the SEC, cleared teams for each of the steps. They have not cleared the conference to play a season. And sometimes I think that gets a little confusing when we're processing the idea of, oh, they're going to play, their schedule is September 26th. I bring this all up because I think the shock really remains. And did you hear this more in your conversations, that why didn't the Big Ten just say, hey, we're going to push the can and kick it down the road a little bit further and just wait and see, and maybe see where we're at in September 26th, like what the SEC and the ACC has done on this approach, that let's wait till people are on campus, let's be patient in the process?
Yes, I talked to Ohio State Senator Josh Myers, who told me that, you know, Ryan Day called a team meeting for them, and they kind of all had an idea what was going to be discussed. But Josh was really hoping that the announcement was going to be, we're going to wait. We're going to push it a couple weeks. We want to make sure we have all the information in front of us. You guys can go ahead and start getting the helmets on and doing some practices. We want to make sure that we're making the best, most informed decision. Let's try and postpone it by a few weeks. That's what he was hoping, beyond hope, that they were going to do. And when they were told that, no, we decided it's in our best interest to try and push the season to the winter or fall, it was another gut punch. You know, just remember from the player's perspective, 6 days earlier, the Big Ten announced the schedule. They announced a full schedule with new opponents, dates. They did a big thing on Big Ten Network. The commissioner came out and talked about it. And now there is no season. And I think that's why there's been so much confusion about how did things change so quickly. We went from having a schedule and being excited to have that schedule and, oh, yes, we're getting closer. We're going to get to practice, to wait a minute, there is no season. And that's why you saw this outcry and this emotion, because they didn't feel like they got enough answers about it. And there was a large sentiment from the players that I talked to that, why didn't we just do what the other conferences did? Why didn't we just start to practice and see if it was workable? Because you're absolutely right. The practice time in the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 right now, that's not guaranteeing kickoff in September. It's not. Those presidents and chancellors continue to meet. They continue to hear from those medical panels about whether it is going to be safe to play an actual season. At least right now, today, it's safe to practice. But I have no information right now that tells me absolutely 100% we're going to get kickoff across the board in September. And if anybody in any of those conferences tells you that they do, they're lying. Nobody knows right now whether there's going to be a season. And I come back to, again, Bronco today talking about the fact that he has erred so much on the side of caution in practice. They haven't really done any football stuff yet because he wants to get the green light that they're going to get a season. So even the coaches don't know whether they're going to have a season at this point in time. They're going as if they are. They're preparing as if they are. But we don't know yet. That's still to be determined.
Wow. Andrea, always great stuff. And hopefully in the coming weeks, we can bring you back on and talk about maybe a little breakdown of the upcoming season and the biggest threat to Clemson, as well as Notre Dame now playing on this ACC schedule. Thank you.
Thank you. Love to be back on.
From the ACC's perspective to the Big Ten, great to have Adam Rittenberg, College Football Insider, joining us here. And Adam, you know, we're taping this on Friday, and I'm seeing some of the pictures of the parent player protest at the Big Ten headquarters. It featured the picture I saw featured about two dozen families, parents and their kids representing, you know, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin. What are you hearing in the last 10 days after, you know, Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren made the announcement that they were postponing the fall season and with the hopes of playing spring football, and how the groundswell and buildup from parents and players, the Justin Fields petition, and then, you know, provoking, you know, the Big Ten to issue another statement just a couple days ago to say we are not having a season and reemphasizing that. What are you hearing about how this is being played out throughout the universities as well as with administrators, as well as coaches and players?
Yeah, Kevin, well, I'm out here at the Big Ten headquarters right now. I was here for the gathering earlier today. And it was just interesting to hear from the parents. You know, one of the themes that came out was that, hey, they need to speak for their kids. In some cases, they don't feel like you know, their sons have as much freedom to voice their opposition like they do. They still want details. They still have a very hard time you know, reconciling that several conferences are going forward with the season and that the Big Ten isn't, and still not knowing the specifics of what went into the Big Ten's decision, because they're only hearing positive information from their football programs. They're hearing positive information about testing. I spoke to one father who said his son at times was tested five times a week between the PCR testing and the saliva testing. And they had heard great feedback from team doctors and even the campus's ability to test. So what changed to push the Big Ten so quickly in their mind to postpone the season? And then they don't feel satisfied with the explanations that have been offered by Commissioner Kevin Warren, and even in some cases by the presidents and chancellors. And so, and then again, even going forward, they want to know, what's your real plan for the winter and spring? How realistic is it? Are we going to be here again, having the season taken away, you know, maybe just weeks before it's set to begin? So yeah, I you know, again, it's understandable that they don't feel like they've received enough real details, real specifics as to why this decision was made by the Big Ten.
It feels like, you know, if the Big Ten took the Pac-12 approach initially when they made the announcement and was as thorough when it comes to communication, again, this is Kevin Warren's first year as the commissioner. If they were more transparent in their communication and maybe had given, you know, the medical people more of a say in the statement, to answer questions as well, when conducting conversations with all the universities, they could have been in front of this instead of now seeing the backlash. But I do want to say this, and I said this earlier, Kevin Warren's made some mistakes when it comes to communicating things. But this anger where he is the scapegoat to me is ridiculous, because the silence from the presidents in the Big Ten who voted, the ADs that have been speaking out, questioning out loud on whether a vote was made, when all they had to do was just call your president and call people instead of just saying this publicly. It feels like there's a lot of people saying, hey, don't look at me, don't blame me, don't blame me, when there's no unified front. And that's where we're seeing all the cracks in this decision-making process.
Right. And you know, to your first point, I spoke to the father of an Illinois player today who said exactly that. The Pac-12 put out that document, which was much more detailed, and it was timely. And it provided some information right away as to why they made such a huge decision to postpone all their fall sports. And then to your second point, I brought that up to the same parent. You know, your son plays for a school whose chancellor reportedly voted to postpone. And he said, I would like some answers from my chancellor. You know, obviously Iowa and Ohio State were two of the large groups here, and their presidents reportedly, you know, said that they wanted to play. But you had an Illinois parent, you had a Wisconsin parent. You know, those schools seem to be in the postponing camp. And so you're right that Kevin Warren has certainly been out in front and has taken a lot of arrows for this. But why isn't there more transparency from the university presidents in the league? I reached out to a bunch of them, Kevin, to try to get comment and didn't get one to speak. I know Michigan State's president spoke earlier this week, but only because they had they went all online with their classes. So he held a press conference with their local media and provided a few more details. But the Michigan State president and the Michigan president both have expertise in this area. They would have been very helpful, I think, immediately after the decision, just like the Oregon president was for the Pac-12, to come out and explain the decision and support Kevin Warren, who you hired. You know, this is not a hire by Big Ten athletic directors or Big Ten fans. This is a hire by the Big Ten president, and he was an outsider, and he's put in a very difficult situation. So why not support him from a presidential standpoint instead of letting him and the league, take the criticism? Now, they certainly deserve a lot of it for poor communication, but I also think, to your point, the president should have stepped up more than they did.
Yeah, the blame game, and it's kind of sad to see the state here when we're talking about presidents that are involved in such an important decision, one that we've never seen in college football before, suddenly go silent. And to bring up Michigan State and Michigan, and the background of those presidents and the information that they have, how they could publicly help out their own commissioner, and to see them go silent in this manner is quite disappointing. The next question I have for you, and you brought it up here a little bit about Michigan State going remote learning. Are you hearing anything else about other universities in the conference going in that direction now that students have returned to campus?
You know, I am not, as we speak today, Kevin, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's a step that's taken at some point. I know there was an issue at Purdue this week where their president, Mitch Daniels, had warned about gatherings and parties. And the next day, there were like 30 students who had to be disciplined for some type of issue. So, again, this is I think, just the realities of having these campuses starting to repopulate with the student body. And you're having outbreaks at Notre Dame and North Carolina, and it's just naive to think that won't happen in the Big Ten. And I would imagine that at some point there'll always be some strong consideration given to remote learning. Now, they don't have to deal with having that and athletics going on at the same time, like the schools in the ACC. But just given the president's approach so far, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Adam, good stuff. I will always say this, and I said this earlier on the podcast, that no matter what, the partying on college campuses will always be undefeated, regardless of a pandemic or a situation, regardless of generations changing and styles changing. Partying on a campus for 18 to 22-year-olds, you're never going to stop that, especially after they were robbed of their spring, their entire finishing out the spring semester, and there's a lot of buildup over the summer, and they want to go out. They want to have a good time. And maybe the idea of us thinking that the student body cares about college football as much as the fan bases, which are the adults, maybe that's sometimes looked too much into it that, hey, I think the student body. I just remember many times that I was surrounded by people when I was in school and the student body, that they wanted to go have a good time over going to a football game. And we're seeing that right now. And we just hope that there's not an outbreak or the rise, which unfortunately there will be, but it's not as great as it is on every campus. And we appreciate the time you joining us. Then hopefully the next time we have you down the road, we can talk more football.
That sounds good, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Adam Rittenberg, Andrea Adelson, as well as David Pollock here on Friday, August 21st. Obviously, very fluid, but it feels good this week compared to how we were last week off the news of the Big Ten and the Pac-12. We will see how this plays out, as I mentioned, 13 days away from college football returning, and the movement feels a little more positive. Thank you to Taylor Schwenk, always jumping through hoops and making sure we get all our scheduled guests at the right time. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast here, the College Football Podcast with Herb Street, Pollock, and Nagandi. And if you're in the mood of being kind, you could always give us a 5-star rating. Thank you. Enjoy. Stay safe. You want football? Wear a mask.